No talking points, no spin. It's politics you can't put down. This is Still Standing with Michael Caputo.
Hi, it's Michael Caputo for Still Standing. Thanks a lot for tuning in. You can catch all our audio podcasts, video, and occasional blog posts at stillstandingpodcast.com. I'm going to have to apologize for the audio quality. Well, no, I'm not sorry at all. I mean, I'm on the beach, so I'm hoping you're not. It doesn't impede your listening ability. It doesn't make you jealous because you're in the polar vortex. I'm not. I'm in Miami Beach, and I figured while I'm sitting here on the beach, I do one of my podcast recordings, one of my segments, because last night I was on Anderson Cooper's AC360 on CNN with Anderson on a panel, and I've got to tell you, we were talking about the wall, and things have really gone down the road on the president's negotiations with the House Democrats, with Nancy Pelosi in particular, but also, of course, Chuck Schumer, and he had to, end the government shutdown. He had to be the adult in the room because the Democrats were never going to let people get back to work because they just weren't willing to give the president the money for the wall, even after they've been funding walls for decades in the House Democratic Caucus. Decades. But because it's Donald Trump asking for money for a barrier on the border with Mexico, they couldn't have it. You know, any other caucus, Republican caucus, House Freedom Caucus, if they were doing anything like this, the media would be calling them out for intransigence, for being children. But of course, since it's Nancy Pelosi and the House Democrats and the new speaker's first, exercise of her newfound muscles as the head of the House of Representatives, the media, almost to a network, almost to a newspaper, are calling this a loss for the president and a win for Nancy Pelosi. Well, I guess in a way they're right. The president is dealing with an appropriations issue here, and appropriations are, by constitution, the purview of the House of Representatives, which is because the Trump supporters did not get out and vote in November 2018. The House is now in the hands of the Democratic Party. So, yeah, he came in there with fewer cards in his hand than Nancy Pelosi did. That's just a fact. It doesn't matter how good of a negotiator you are if the person on the other side of the negotiation refuses to act like an adult, refuses to compromise in any way, shape, or form just because it's your plan to build a wall. It doesn't make him any less of a negotiator. He wasn't even in negotiations, really. He was in a one-way conversation with people who had their fingers in their ear. That's what it was going on. As you know, everybody knows that. And if you disagree with that, that's because you're an ardent Trump opponent. Now, the president has reopened the government for 3 weeks. We're a week into that now. We're 2 weeks away from the government shutting down again if the president doesn't get money for the wall. And the Democrats today still are saying that they will not give him the money for the wall that he wants. But of course, the president has broad leeway to declare a state of emergency. Frankly, whether one exists or not, that's a fact. The president can only use specific powers that Congress has already codified by law. And he has to say which powers he's using in that state of emergency declaration. It could be military powers. It could be immigration powers, money committed to military or immigration in the past. He can move it around. There's also talk about some of the powers granted in a recent disaster spending bill passed by Congress last year. It included $13.9 billion for disaster relief and victim relief after last year's hurricanes. If he uses that $13.9 billion, even a nickel of it, for the wall, it's a huge mistake, a terrible mistake. But if he declares a state of emergency and uses military immigration powers to build a wall, I think he'll be able to do it. Once you get into the specific area of emergency powers, then the president is pretty much acting within a delegated framework. Finding it in court will be kind of difficult. By the way, Undersecretary of Defense for Policy John Rood said on January 29th that President Donald Trump has the authority to use the military to construct a barrier without even calling a national emergency. And he said he might do that if he can't get funding for a border wall through Congress. And Undersecretary of Defense Rood was citing in particular 10 U.S. Code 284. That's a specific law where the president is authorized to use the military without a state of emergency to build a wall. Now, if that's what the undersecretary says, I believe him. That, of course, would be challenged as well. But, of course, we all know, if you've looked at the law, that Congress placed literally no barriers, no pun intended, on presidential prerogatives to declare a state of emergency. There's just no limitations. Any declaration of an emergency would activate something like 100 extraordinary powers that the president holds. It would be nearly impossible to stop him. There have been 32 declarations of a state of emergency since 1979, when President Carter declared a state of emergency in regards to Iran. By the way, that state of emergency is still in place. Since 1979. So these actually have happened, these states of emergency have happened since Abe Lincoln, and it actually takes a two-thirds vote of both the House and the Senate to overrule the president. That has never happened, and of course it won't happen now. According to the 1976 National Emergencies Act, Congress didn't actually specifically define what is and isn't a national emergency, and it's hard to imagine what criteria a federal court could use in trying to decide whether a national emergency is properly declared. I'm sure they're challenging in court, the leftists who want no border security, and it'll take some time, but frankly, I don't see how they're going to stop the president. You know, statutorily, the president can redirect, already programmed, already appropriated funds, and lacking this clear statutory definition of what constitutes an emergency, any legal challenges to that kind of a declaration will probably fail. I'm not an attorney, but every attorney I work with, and I work with many, that's what they tell me. Now, an effective challenge in court may address whether or not the military should or even can build a border wall. That might be, according to one of my very talented attorney friends, that might be the way to prevail, to challenge whether the military should or even can do this. But whether the president has power, that's a loser of an argument. Of course, it's being these arguments against the wall, against the state of emergency, are being made by Democrats who really have no interest in border security. You don't have to look any further than their details that they released on Thursday of this week about what their idea of border security is. Within that border security, proposal of theirs, the Dems actually want to freeze the number of Border Patrol agents and, of course, block any wall construction and wildlife refuges around the border to protect whatever, the border snail. If you are serious about border security, you are not freezing the number of Border Patrol agents because we don't have enough. And if you want to beef up security on the border, the primary agent of security on the border is the human Border Patrol agent. Freezing the number of Border Patrol agents is an absolute indication that Democrats are not serious about border security at all. And if you ask me, I'm not an attorney, but I know plenty of them because I do a lot of litigation communications for law firms. Challenging the president's declaration of a state of emergency will stall the president, but it's not going to stop him. So talk about that in the State of the Union, Mr. President. And when the Democrats refuse to give you what we need as a nation to secure our borders, declare a state of emergency. Do it. Absolutely do it. Make it the 33rd state of emergency declaration since 1979. Let's get this wall built.
Please remain standing. We'll be right back.
Thanks for sticking around at Still Standing. You can check out our podcasts and videos and blog posts at stillstandingpodcast.com. If you like it, please subscribe. It's free. Or leave a review on iTunes, whatever you want to do. I do this every week, and it's been one hell of a week this week. Typically, I try to get this stuff done midweek, but it was a long one. after last Friday when my old friend, dear old friend, Roger Stone, was indicted, arrested, and hauled into the courthouse as the most recent victim of the Mueller investigation. Of course, you know that 20 plus, I guess something like 29 FBI officers with automatic weapons, two boats, and back behind Roger's house on his dock, two armored vehicles on his front lawn, just an absolute overkill. It was like he was some kind of an armed drug lord. A dangerous felon of some sort, head of a gang or a mafia group. It's an outrageous overreach by the Department of Justice. And the more Americans see this stuff, the more we understand that it can happen to anyone. And by the way, the more we see it and accept it, the more normal it will become. Roger was not dangerous at all, of course. And, you know, as people say, he might have destroyed evidence. Roger has been under investigation for 2 years, as far as he knew, probably more. If he was going to destroy evidence, he'd have destroyed it a lot longer ago than the day before he got picked up. And by the way, Roger's done nothing wrong, so he had nothing to destroy. The accusations against him, by the way, have nothing to do with the 2016 election. None of it. It's all allegedly, crimes that happened long after the campaign was over, long after Hillary Clinton got her head handed to her in the 2016 presidential election. Handed her her head. And see, that's the reason why Roger Stone was arrested. Because he helped the president of the United States defeat Hillary Clinton. In fact, he was the most anti-Clinton member of the retinue around Donald Trump. Roger Stone left the campaign in order to finish a book on Hillary Clinton. That book is a damning indictment of Hillary and Bill and all the scumbags around them. That book served as the chapter and verse of the opposition research that Donald Trump's campaign used. That and Clinton Cash, another great book that outlined the financial crimes of the Clinton family, the Clinton Foundation, Uranium One, all the other ways that they have scammed millions and millions of dollars since they entered public life. Roger Stone was the most anti-Clinton person around Donald Trump, and that's why you saw him taken down the way he was taken down on Friday. And I'll tell you what, Roger took it the way that I thought that he would. He has been a very public person all of his life, and since his arrest on Friday, he has been out in the media and an onslaught, an absolute media full-court press, just like I thought he would. Roger has been screaming to the high heavens for 2 years about his innocence. Anytime somebody brought forward something that they thought would indicate that he was somehow a conduit between the Russians and the Trump campaign, hilarious stupidity. Roger would be out there screaming, providing emails and texts and metadata that showed he was absolutely innocent. And it happened over and over and over again, one time after another. These crazed leftists would come out with stupid allegations that appeared to be probably a concern from the Mueller investigation. Some of it appeared to come from the Mueller investigation. And each time, Roger Stone would knock those charges down. That's why right now you don't see anything in this indictment about his tweet that caused so much consternation among the leftist media, the pro-Clinton compliant reporters. When he tweeted out that it was sometime soon going to be the Podesta brothers' time in the barrel. That tweet and everything around that, all the accusations around that, and somehow or another he knew that the WikiLeaks tranche was going to be dropped on John Podesta. None of that's in the indictment, of course. And then there's the accusation that somehow or another he was coordinating with Guccifer via Twitter direct messages. Guccifer now allegedly, at least accused of being an arm of Russian intelligence. None of that is in the indictment either because Roger knocked that stuff down. They accused him of communicating with Guccifer, and he revealed the Twitter direct messages that went on between the two of them, and it was absolutely innocuous bullshit stuff. And then there's the accusation that somehow or another he had advanced knowledge or interaction with WikiLeaks, and there's none of that in the indictment either. Every time Roger Stone got an accusation through the media, something that seemed like it might be coming from the Mueller team, he screamed to the high heavens and knocked the living crap out of it. That's why it took him so long to come after him and arrest him. And now they've got, you know, they started out, I'll tell you what, on May 2nd, when I was interviewed by the Mueller investigation, they were very clearly interested in Roger Stone, and especially when it comes to Russian collusion or conspiracy with the Russians. They seem very convinced that that Roger was somehow mixed up with the Russians. And I'm actually writing a great deal about that in my book, which will be coming out soon. Interview with the Mueller investigation made it very clear they were focused on Roger for conspiracy and collusion. And now here we are, I guess, a year plus later, year and a half since my Mueller interview was May 2nd, 2018. So 9 months later, we see the indictment has nothing to do with collusion or conspiracy. It's all about process crimes that took place after the election. What do we mean by process crimes? Crimes that they are, you know, accused of, you know, he's accused of crimes that took place in the process of this investigation, where he was alleged to have lied to Congress, which is hilarious. I mean, in Congress, especially this House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, which is filled with liars. And then he's accused of threatening Randy Credico, which, by the way, is also hilarious because Randy Credico threatened to put a bullet in the head of another Mueller witness, but somehow or another he's not accused. He hasn't been arrested for threatening to put a bullet in the head of another witness. Somehow Randy Credico is still walking free. Both Randy Credico and Jerome Corsi, the two men upon which the Mueller investigation is basing their entire case against Roger Stone, have lied in front of the grand jury, lied to the Mueller investigation. Both of them have absolutely abject lied through their teeth to the federal prosecution and to the federal investigation, and somehow or another, they're not being charged. I wonder why. I mean, obviously, it's clear. These two men have, they've gone from thinking that Roger Stone was involved in collusion and conspiracy, and now they're down to, they found two men that are willing to lie about Roger Stone. And of course, they have documents that they say back it up, but once you understand that Roger Stone sat for 4.5 hours with the House Intelligence Committee and the context of his answers to these questions, I'm not quite sure that the judge is going to see this as a very serious case. Now, let me tell you something. Roger Stone was released on Friday, not for $250,000 bond, for his signature. He didn't even put a dollar up for his bond. He signed his name, whereas if he absconded, if he took off and didn't show up, he would owe them $250,000. That means that the judge did not think he was the least bit of a flight risk, not even a bit of a flight risk. But somehow or another, 29 men armed with machine guns had to come to his house, right? It's ridiculous. So now we have this this judge has a hearing today, Friday, where the judge was kind of wagging her finger at Roger for talking too much to the media. And there's, I guess, in early February, like February 8th, both the Mueller team and Roger's team have to present whether or not Roger Stone should endure a gag order. A couple of weeks into the Manafort investigation, the same judge, Judge Berman, I guess her name is, put a gag order on Paul Manafort. But see, Paul Manafort's a bit different in a lot of ways. These were multi-million dollar financial crimes. Roger has no financial crimes alleged. And conspiracy to defraud the United States of tax revenues. There is no conspiracy charge against Roger Stone. And the one thing that's very important is that Roger Stone makes his living in the media. He is a commentator on InfoWars, has a radio show daily, 5 o'clock, and he's in the media every day promoting his books. If he cannot speak publicly, then he's not going to be able to make money, and he won't be able to pay for lawyers, which is an absolute and complete abuse of the legal system. So the judge is going to have to figure out, if she wants to gag him, how to gag him. It's going to have to be fenced in. It's not like Manafort, who didn't spend time in the media anyway and wasn't making any money in the media business. Roger is making money as a media spokesperson. So if there's going to be a gag order, it's going to have to be limited. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens after the February 8th court hearing. Of course, the Mueller team is going to want him gagged because Roger Stone has successfully knocked the stuffing out of charges like the three I mentioned. The time of the barrel tweet about the Podestas, the accusation that he was somehow interacting and colluding with Guccifer, and the idea that somehow or another he had advance knowledge of the WikiLeaks stuff. All three of those things, he knocked the stuffing out of them with his mouth, with his wide and loud and clear communications. Roger has always wanted to preserve his First Amendment right during this process, and he's insisting upon it now. From my perspective, if Roger Stone is allowed to continue to speak, these charges are going to fall away. They're going to fall away. I know he's going to go all the way to trial on this. And if you look at his indictment, it's looking thinner and thinner and thinner by the day. Now, will there be superseding indictments? Will they bring something else more serious? Will they threaten a member of his family with prosecution if he doesn't tell a lie about the president? Because really, this is what it's all about, ladies and gentlemen. And you know this. The Mueller investigation is the follow-on to Crossfire Hurricane, the FBI investigation that came out of Obama's weaponization of the national security apparatus to spy upon the Republican candidate for the presidency of the United States. It's a fact. You know it is. The Crossfire Hurricane investigation and the president's campaign, the allegations that he was somehow or another involved with Russia, or his campaign was colluding with Russia, that wasn't the start of it. The start of it was when the NSA's database was being queried to try to track the Trump campaign. We know that happened. Admiral Rogers stopped it before the election. He stopped it in like October of 2016. But they were already spying on the Trump campaign using the national security apparatus in the summer of 2016. This whole thing has been about destroying Donald Trump, destroying his family, destroying his businesses, and destroying his friends like Roger Stone. Because we cannot ever have another man or woman, a billionaire, who's independent of the insider culture of Washington, of the establishment of the deep state. They cannot ever allow another independent person to run for and win the presidency. Because in 15 years or 20 years, when some billionaire wakes up and rolls over and turns to her husband and says, "Honey, our country is broken and only I can fix it," her husband's got to say back to her, "You can't do that. Did you see what they did to Donald Trump, his family, his businesses, his friends? I can't allow you to do it." That's what this is all about. That's why Roger Stone was taken down by 29 officers armed with automatic weapons, a helicopter, two boats, and two armored vehicles. That's why that happened, ladies and gentlemen, because it's all about intimidation. Not just intimidation of Roger Stone, not just intimidation of Roger Stone's friends like myself, not just intimidation of witnesses in the Mueller investigation like myself. This is about 15 years from now, when that billionaire turns to her husband early in the morning and says she wants to run for president. It cannot be allowed to happen. They will not allow it to happen. And that's why Roger Stone was taken down the way he was taken down. Let me tell you something. Roger Stone knows this. He understands the true intent, the true mission of the Mueller investigation, Crossfire Hurricane, and the national security apparatus weaponized against the Republican candidate for President Donald Trump. He understands the true nature of all of this, and he is absolutely committed to defending himself against these charges all the way through to the end in court. The problem is he's got to raise $50,000 a month in order to pay for this. That's why I put up a GoFundMe, RogerStoneGoFundMe.com, if that's interesting to you. I would encourage you to donate to Roger Stone's legal fund, RogerStoneGoFundMe.com. It flips on over to a GoFundMe page. I'm raising a bit of money for him. But Roger's got to raise about $50,000 a month. And if he doesn't, He can't afford to defend himself. And if Roger Stone can't defend himself, this whole operation wins. You understand that? It all boils down in the end to Roger Stone. I don't think Roger wanted to have that honor. I don't think any of us would want that kind of focus on us. But that's where we're ending up after all this witch hunt. After the weaponized national security apparatus of the United States spying upon the Republican candidate for president, crossfire hurricane to try to prove that somehow or another the Trump campaign was colluding with Russia, the bogus FISA warrants that were gained by lying to judges about the origin of Hillary Clinton's opposition research, which was bought from Russian spies, Russian collusion right there. All of this boils down to Roger Stone. Roger Stone, a man I've known for 35 years. I was his driver for a brief time in the 80s. I've known him a long, long time. I'm extremely upset about this. And frankly, what's really upsetting me right now is I'm not allowed to talk to him. I've gone from speaking to Roger very frequently for 35 years, sometimes daily, sometimes more than one time a day. He's one of my best friends, to the point where I can't speak to him at all. I haven't spoken to him since his arrest. I've run out of information. I don't really know much more than what's in the press. And that's because the judge has ordered that he not speak to witnesses or victims. Of course, I'm neither. I witnessed nothing. Nothing happened. And I've certainly not been victimized, and neither has anyone else. This is all bogus, this whole entire investigation. The whole thing. And it's all on Roger Stone's head. What happens next, I don't know. But I'll tell you this. I know Roger Stone very, very well. And he is totally up for this. He is completely prepared. And each and every one of us better buy some popcorn. Stock up, because this is about to get really interesting. Michael Caputo is still standing. Thanks a lot for tuning in. That's it for me today. And next week, back to Buffalo from Florida. I've enjoyed my time down here, getting back and forth to Buffalo and Florida quite a bit, working a lot in Puerto Rico. Got a lot more to tell you. Tune in next week here on Still Standing. That's StillStandingPodcast.com.